What's up? Welcome to Sweathead. I have Tina Yip. She runs a community of strategists called Strategist, but without the vowels. She's the director of marketing and culture at Berlin Cameron in New York. She comes from Hong Kong. She also runs a podcast called 5 to 9, which is about side projects. But today we're largely going to focus on community, what it is, and then what strategy folk need from community. Welcome, Tina Yip.
Hi, Mark. So honored to be here. How are you?
Well, I'm honored to have you as well. And I am very well. Thank you for asking. Community. Now, there are lots of different types of people who do get involved with communities and trying to create them and trying to contribute to them. I think you and I have quite different energy in that I'm a little bit more mellow unless I'm in front of people, and then I'm a bit of an agitator. Whereas you have this kind of magnetic vibe about you where I think when you walk into a room, I don't want to use the word bubbly because it seems condescending, but you have this spirit, right, that can captivate a room because you're thoughtful, you're considerate, you don't try to dominate, and you do enjoy bringing people together. With the strategist community, and so for people who are listening, when I say the strategist community, I'm talking about a thing. It's strtgst.co.
Well, I try to make a jingle out of it where it's like STRTGST, what can we do with it? It's like kind of catchy. We're still figuring that part out.
As you were growing up, did you find yourself trying to work out how to get people together, bring people together and create communities?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I've been thinking about it a lot, especially in the way that I approach Strategist. I mean, you kind of touch on it a little bit where we definitely are very, very thoughtful around the whole experience, from getting the invite to arriving at the venue to when you're there, where's the food, where is the green room of the speakers, and then the whole flow of the event. And I was like, where did I even learn this? Why am I like this? And it kind of all came together when I realized, like, growing up, I was a theater kid. So I did a ton of theater. I was in West Side Story. I did High School Musical. I was in Oliver. And I also studied theater. I guess in Hong Kong it would be primary school and secondary school. So the equivalent in the US would be like middle school and high school. During that time, I studied theater. And a big part of theater is, you know, on stage, everything needs to have a purpose. That was something that I kind of just pieced together as to how I approach strategy and what strategy should be. Like, everything that you make here should have a purpose when you do a brief, whatever it is. And with Strategist, the event, I've applied that sort of mentality to how we approach things. And also, one thing that really stuck out to me growing up also is I've always been so, so grateful and so, so thankful for my passion for theater and music and having that community growing up. Now, if we want to dig deep into my psyche, growing up in Hong Kong, I've never felt like I fit in, you know, not to stereotype the people in Hong Kong, but I mean, as a girl, you're quote unquote supposed to be, you know, more quiet and, you know, kind of submissive. And I'm very loud and very passionate and just like kind of like very big also, like very gregarious, like talk to people. I've always felt, and people tell me that I'm like too much all the time. Like, you're so much, you're like way too much. And growing up, I felt like kind of out of place, but it's not, I've only felt like I was part of something when I was like in choir, in theater, in when I'm like performing or whatever it is. And I've always been so grateful and so thought a lot about, you know, this sort of feeling of having a passion and then connecting with other people from different backgrounds, different ages, who also just share that passion. And it's because of this passion that we have bonded together and I guess created community together.
Mm-hmm. The kind of energy and the amount of energy you have, it has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
It's really interesting hearing you draw some kind of connection to being a theater kid, because obviously theater is a bunch of people in a room where a small subset of them try to create energy amongst themselves to then create energy in the people watching. So it's, you know, if you think about the very the first principles of all of that. I can absolutely see the connection. And it is funny how these things from when we're young, they follow us in these little echoes, these little murmurs. They follow us for 10, 20 years or something. And often we don't give them enough attention until we do. And then we really give them attention. And it seems like that's been a little bit of your journey as well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you were young, the things that you do are just so pure because you don't feel the pressure in society yet. You're kind of just in your own bubble doing whatever you want to do and expressing yourself in whatever the way that you want to do. And when people as adults, like you feel lost, it's oftentimes very helpful to just kind of think back on what were the things that you did in your childhood and think back on what were those like purest moments that you had when you were growing up and kind of follow and kind of think through what you should do next that way.
How does it make you feel when someone says you're way too much?
I think growing up, definitely there were moments where I was scarred by it because, I mean, I was young. And I was like, you know, why am I like this? It's just like, I thought it's just natural for me and it should be okay for me to feel this way. And as an adult, especially, I think being in New York and studying in the US, I went to school in Boston University. I think that experience really developed me as a person and kind of embracing my otherness and just being okay with who I am. Because I know that when I act this way, it makes me happy. And I think of things differently because I am too much, because I do think and am more thoughtful when I approach certain things and I embrace it now. So I feel fine about it. I feel good about it now. I've grown.
It's a strange comment to receive when you're young and you're still really actually trying to work out who and what you are for someone to then say you're too much when you're like, I don't even know what I am yet.
I mean, I remember when I was young, I was actually left-handed and going to school, I think it was kindergarten, they like made me right-handed because you're supposed to be right-handed. I don't know what this insinuates, but it's just kind of, it's not okay to just force people to be in this box of what you're supposed to be. And I do feel like I'm the kind of person who kind of want to draw outside the lines and kind of test different things out and just like be the person that people don't really expect me to be.
Did you have a loud household? I often find households, families, and offices have different types of volume. You know, I know families who are all quite loud. And it doesn't mean that every single person is always loud, but in general, when I go to a particular, you know, a family's place, it's like, it's really loud. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how I can handle this. I've got to process this. Our place is pretty quiet. Was your household loud?
Not really. I mean, the loudest thing, I would always be singing at home. I would always be like belting musicals and like belting Broadway songs in my room. So that's just me being loud in my own space.
So as far as the strategist community that you're developing and the events that you do, how did you identify that there was a need? And then why did you think you could help fulfill it?
The seed of starting Strategist came 2 years ago. I was working at a digital agency in New York, and I was at this like mid-level strategist level where I was doing like social strategy for big brands. And I remember distinctly there was one day where I was like spinning my wheels to make a deck on a hashtag strategy and a Facebook post. And I realized, oh my gosh, like I'm spending all day doing this hashtag strategy. And there's all these like back and forth with the team and the clients on this hashtag strategy. And this is what I'm doing with my life. And at the same time, I was like, you know, what should I do next in my career? So whenever I feel this way, I tend to want to look outward to kind of talk to people who have been through it, gather people to discuss it, hear from different perspectives. So I just kind of like put an event together. It was called the Mid-Year Struggles. I asked two people to be featured in the Fireside Chat. One person, she was a strategist, left to become an entrepreneur. She now runs a really cool 3D knitted apparel company called Same But Different. It used to be called Thursday Finest. Now it's called Same But Different. Check them out. And the other person, she just got promoted to be an associate director of strategy. So I put this event together, put an invite, put it out there. And, you know, I've hosted events before, and usually in New York City, especially, it's like pulling teeth to get people to go anywhere. But for this one, I just like put it out there and 100 people RSVP'd and 50 people showed up, which was crazy. And I didn't even do that much promotion. So I just like did that. We did the event. It was great. And at the same time, during that 2 years ago, I started my podcast 5 to 9 and I just kind of was feeling more momentum with the podcast. So I just continued pursuing the podcast instead and kind of forgot about this event that I did. And however, during that year when I was doing my podcast, there were many people reaching out to me and sending me emails or sending me a LinkedIn invite saying, hey, what happened to this thing that I heard about? Or I went to this thing that you made a few months ago. Is there going to be more? So I realized, I guess people want this and there's like a need and demand for it. So I put out a survey to ask strategists, you know, if I were to make something out of this and make regular events, what do you want out of it? So there were a lot of very intentional questions around what sort of programming they want to see, what sort of community they want from something like a strategy community. And it also hit me at the time that, you know, I go to a ton of different events and I'm pretty aware of the different communities out there. And there's groups for entrepreneurs, for designers, for developers, for general people in advertising, but there's not really one for strategists. So I was like, why not? Then I should like probably just make it. So we started making events all based on the results that we got from the survey. The top things that people wanted to see is learning more about culture. The second thing was learning more about their hard skills, getting better at their hard skills. And the third thing was having kind of really real deep conversations about being a strategist and being in advertising or just like being a person in this like crazy advertising world. So based on that, we have a series called Culture Of, if you look on our website. So we did Culture of Sneakers, Culture of Chill. We're right now planning Culture of Drag. And these are always kind of subcultures that on the surface that, you know, it might seem like, you know, what is this thing? You know, what is this sneaker thing that's happening? You know, why are people lining up for Supreme? Like, why is this such a trend right now? It seems so superficial. But when you look under the hood, there's actually a lot going on inside and there's a lot of history that people don't realize that are there. And those are also things that really, really fascinates me and fascinates an average strategist too, because that's what we do. We learn about culture and we love culture and we are curious people. Mm. Yeah, so there's that. And then there's like the hard skills one, which we did a workshop with you on finding clarity. And then the last kind of events is all around having vulnerable conversations in a small group. So we did one recently on imposter syndrome, discussing what it is with the author of Choose Wonder Over Worry, Amber Ray. She was really incredible. That's kind of the long-winded answer of how strategist came about.
Well, there was a second question, but let's pretend I didn't ask it, which is why you? You know what? Why you?
Oh, why me? Oh my God, why me? I mean, I love people and I am an extrovert and I feel energy when I see people around. And I think because of going back to my theater background and having that sort of realization and gratefulness of people coming together because of this one passion, regardless of background, it was just very intuitive for me to create something for this occupation and career that I have that I have like been doing in the past few years, and seeing that other strategists, and strategists is also, you know, it's quite a lonely journey being a strategist. Like a lot of times you go off doing your research and you just kind of want to like talk to people about it. And also there's a lot of nuances of things that strategists go through that other people might not. So I think, you know, it's important for me to make it happen. And I just feel like this connection to it. And also at the same time, I think, you know, I've definitely have been to a lot of industry events. And most of them are just like, you know, they're not very thoughtful. Like they're like a panel of four people talking at you, telling you, you know, this is Influencers 101. And, you know, you don't really get that much value out of it. And also, I recently read a book called The Art of Gathering. That's like my Bible. It essentially tells you, I mean, it tells you that Priya Parker, who's the author, tells you that, you know, we spend so much of our time as humans gathering, but how we gather, we oftentimes are quite thoughtless about how we gather to make sure that, you know, we gain the most out of our gatherings.
Hey, when you talk about the mid-year struggles, what are the mid-years?
I mean, it's all relative, but I mean, I think that there's a difficult jump between being a strategist and then getting up to senior strategist and also senior strategist to associate director. To me, those are the mid-years. I feel like there are probably going to be people who are listening who's going to be like fighting me about it. But I think that one of the things that I wanted to talk about during that event is just kind of like the difficulty in how to get through that jump. Because like from junior strategist, or if junior strategist is even a thing, to being like a mid-level, just like a strategist title, not that it's not hard, but it's like more straightforward than the jump between strategist, senior strategist, and senior strategist to associate director. What do you think, Mark? Well, to you, what are the mid-years?
Well, I think America has too much focus on this. When I started to run strategy at the agency that you joined as well, I spent a little bit of time just trying to pull together all the different job titles. And in some of the agencies I worked at in Sydney, in strategy at least back then, there was a planner and maybe a senior planner. And then the planning director was head of planning. And I had a boss at Leo Burnett Sydney whose title, I believe, was planning director. And his next role was CEO. And then I moved to America and I felt this pressure on titles and promotions and me in such an extreme way. And it took me a little bit of time to wrap my head around it, because I think it's really distracting. And I really do, and I know I've talked about this a couple of times, I really do like the way of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where there's a master. And I'm not saying that a head of planning or a CEO is a master, so I don't know how analogous this really is, but maybe that is the analog, right? There's a master, people train, they get better, they tend to have to compete, and then the master will award a belt, and there are only usually a handful of belts. And they'll award a belt when they think the person's ready. It's not something that people discuss. And I know there aren't salaries involved, so it's not really a like-for-like thing. But what I love about the Brazilian jiu-jitsu analog is the focus on skills, getting good, not being distracted by the materialism of a career and the titles. And I remember sitting in front of a spreadsheet. I can still see myself. And I had, I think there were six or seven titles. I was trying to work out how to fit them all together. I don't believe in the title junior strategist. I think it talks down the idea of a strategist. You're either a strategist or you're not, or a planner or you're not. So let's just start there. And then you get all this associate nonsense. It's like all the, you know, rising senior and junior sophomore rising whatever's in college. I'm like, what? I don't know. You know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, I don't really care. Why do we have to have labels for all these things? Because some of these labels, when the kids are growing up here, they relate to a 6-month period, a 12-month period. Doesn't matter. So I think it's materialistic and distracting, and it puts pressure on people because they see all their friends updating their LinkedIn profiles and they're like CMO of startup with two people or three people, you know, with three people at the age of 25. The person who's a junior strategist is like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? So I think a lot of these constructs really do get in the way. And I also think that companies sometimes manipulate people with them. But if they matter, oh, you can't change that. It's like, that's a really difficult cultural thing to change. If they matter to the general population, it's hard to change it in one company.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like the whole different levels, things, it all comes from also corporate culture. And, you know, the reason why there are these titles and agencies too is because clients can then understand, oh, you're the director, so I can talk to you like this. And whereas you're kind of more junior, so, you know, you might not get that as much. It's a toxic cycle.
The thing that also puts pressure on this is that as soon as people hit 40, they tend to disappear from the industry. So therefore, are the mid-years in the 20s? Because a lot of the job titles you're describing tend to be people in the 20s, and they're probably not even mid-years, really.
But, yeah. I think that's a good point. I think we're, now that I think about it, I think where I was getting at with the term mid-years is people who's not like fresh out of college, but have been in advertising for like 5-6 years, have some sort of experience. So we can kind of have a common ground to gather these group of people, because the people who want to talk about the people who are fresh out of college, the thing that they want to talk about is quite different from people who have been in the industry for a little bit, and they have different problems too.
And
what strategists have been focusing on are kind of more these people who, you know, have been in the advertising industry or being strategists for at least like 4 or 5 years. They have some sort of like exposure on client facing things and how to do strategy and how to develop that way.
Okay. Here's what I want to do. I want to go through the events that you've done. And I'm going to ask you a simple question. We'll go through them relatively quickly. Okay. So as far as the mid-year struggles, what was the main idea or even the main question that you took out of that event?
I think what made me think a lot about there is, do I want to stay in advertising? I think that's a constant question that people in advertising or people in strategy have. We love, like, for strategists specifically, we love doing strategy. We love the act of, you know, going off into the world, exploring cultures, understanding like demographic and audience. However, when you put into most advertising companies with big corporate clients, it's the stuff that you have to deal with is not just, you know, the awesome culture things you get to learn and audience stuff and research that you get to do. It's like dealing with client bureaucracy, dealing with a lot of kind of like politics. So that's kind of what I've started to think more on after that event.
Okay. Let's jump to the most recent one. Imposter syndrome with Amber Ray. What was the main idea or main question, main thought that you took out of that event?
So the reason why we did imposter syndrome is because we realized that strategists are people, you know, we're quote unquote supposed to be, you know, we have all the answers. We are supposed to be the smartest person in the room. But a lot of times, like when, especially the very like ambitious strategists who are very driven, sometimes you get to a place where you're just like, I'm just talking here. I don't even know whether I'm supposed to be here, and I'm starting to doubt myself. So that was like the insight from the event. And what we gathered was what Amber Ray told us is whenever you feel that feeling, you want to name that sort of feeling that you have and confront it head on and say, you know, why am I having this fear? And what do I need to say to it to be able to move forward?
That's a powerful technique. You hear that technique come up in many different ways. One is through the meditation world, label the thought and let it pass on. But also, you know, you can turn towards it and question it as well. The dark arts of trends. What did you learn? That was Rachel Mercer and
Nayantara Dutta. The idea was that there's always trend reports and trend events being like, here are the trends of 2018. But, you know, we wanted to do something that's a little different. That's more around how do trends even come about? Like, what is like the dark arts into making these reports? And Nayantara used to work at JWT Intelligence, who makes these incredible trend reports. So she lets us kind of like talk through, think about what are actually trends and are they actually self-fulfilling prophecies where the media just picks three examples of like, you know, three celebrities wearing neon. So they say, hey, neon's a trend this winter. That they actually use as an example and no one in the audience was wearing neon. And I also haven't seen people in the street really wearing neon this season. One thing that I thought was most interesting is like this self-fulfilling prophecy with trends and how the media essentially say that when something is a trend, it kind of become a self-fulfilling thing.
Yeah. There's a bit of neon over in Stockholm in winter.
Yeah.
There's probably a bit of neon in Shanghai and Beijing.
Yeah.
Okay. The agency model in chaos with Jules
Erhart. This one was an interesting one. So we had Jules Erhart from Us Two. He headed up their New York office, and essentially I found out about him by seeing this article that he wrote called The State of the Digital Nation on Medium. It's like a 90-page article, super long, but he goes really in depth around the holes in agency models. Why he doesn't believe that charging by time works anymore, and what he believes what he believes agency should do in the future. And he is personally starting his new agency, and he's still like figuring out, you know, what is the right structure and what is the right kind of model that will be best for the future. So there was a lot of discussion around, you know, what people were unhappy about at their work and in terms of agency model. And there was a lot of like very provocative conversations there. We made a provocation wall that people had to put some of their provocations on there. And we like discussed based on that.
Nathan Atkinson from Local Projects, formerly from Big Spaceship. He and I hosted a day with the Society of Digital Agencies together as well. He's a good guy.
So he talked about his process and how, and the work that he does at local projects, which are specifically strategy and experiences at museums and art galleries, which is super cool. And an interesting thing that happened at that event was we had this idea where we wanted people to show their work in progress and their, you know, a deck that someone is working on. That was definitely quite a big highlight for me, because at first, when people, someone showed their deck and the community like were hesitant to comment, but after like one or two people started, everyone just had like all these opinions about how he can improve his deck. And that was where I felt like the community coming to life. And I definitely want to do more of that, where it's just like getting people together to do this like critique sessions and help each other out. And that's, I think, one of the more valuable things that we want to do more of next year.
I think in critique and feedback, which they're not always the best words. I think that other industries have better words for these things, but it can take a little bit of time for a person to realize that when someone's talking about their work, they're not necessarily talking about the person or even the way that that person thinks and works. They're just talking about the work. And I find putting things up on a wall and using that as a way to wean the person of my idea is useful. And there are various other techniques. I think in yoga, they use the word adjustment. You know, can I adjust you? And I like that. And in production, they talk about notes. Give the director a note. They don't want feedback. They don't want orders. So there are these other words that I think are quite useful for the work that we do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree with being very specific with words, but also it's important to set the right sort of environment so that people know that this is a brave space. You can be vulnerable and that, you know, no one is here to attack you. So it's just important to also say that, you know, this is a space that we are establishing right now. And for the next hour, this is what's going to happen. So that's also important.
Have you seen dynamics like that in an actual agency?
In an actual agency? I mean, I would say the closest I had was when I got to work with Johan Vick Spaceship. I think I really, really enjoyed the strategy team meetings that you put together, which was a lot about, you know, just learning from each other, being open about the projects that we're working on and helping each other out. And yeah, I think that was the closest.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the people who are in that world, how and whether they apply any of the stuff that we did together. So we would have weekly meetings and we would start with a question. What's one risk you've taken in the past week and how did it go? And I think that's a really important question, because it sets the expectation to take risks and that there's forgiveness and that the point of the risk is to learn. And if you learn, and if every week you're trying to do that or every day you're trying to do that over the course of a year, you're really going to grow. That's what I believe. When I've tried some of those techniques where it's about vulnerability, trying to include lots of different voices, not paying a lot of attention to titles and hierarchy, just flattening it, sitting in a circle. When I've tried that stuff in other agencies, it can be really difficult because people are waiting for other people to catch them out. They don't trust the situation. They're used to being bossed around and told what to do. It doesn't work everywhere. I believe in that way of working if you're working with people who have some kind of soul and creative output.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely very special if you have that at work. But if you don't, that's why, again, going back to strategists, like, that's why strategists exist. Like, we want to have this kind of third party that you can go to, that strategists can go to and be open and be vulnerable with. People say this all the time, where oftentimes people are more open to a stranger that they met than someone that they truly know for a long time. So it's nice just having this kind of like third party support group outside of work. And that's what we're trying to build too.
Okay. And then what about the two culture of events? One is Culture of Chill, which was a deep dive on self-care. What did you learn from that?
Why we created that is we wanted to explore this subculture of, you know, I'm sure anywhere you look, meditation is everywhere, yoga, mindfulness, the idea of just like, you know, staying in and having self-care time is such a thing right now. And whenever we do these events, we want to uncover like the underlying meaning and what is really, really causing B subculture. And what we realize is like people are exhausted with politics. People are exhausted with being on social media every single day and being jealous of whatever influencers are posting. And people are just like, in general, they just need me time to recharge and focus on themselves and remember why they exist in this world. So, you know, that's why this subculture exists right now. So that was really interesting.
Okay. And then the other culture of event was culture of sneakers.
Yes. I love that one. That was my first. That was our first one. It was really cool because we created this like mini sneaker exhibit where I worked with two of my friends who are big sneakerheads to create an exhibit featuring 8 OG sneakers and telling the stories behind why are the Jordans such a big deal? Why are the Chuck Taylors such a big deal? Like, who was Tinker Hatfield? And the thing that most fascinated me after the event was hearing the founder of StockX speak. For those who don't know what StockX is, it is a secondhand resale market for sneakers, but they're also starting to sell other products. It was just very fascinating to hear about the, I think it's like a $6 billion industry, the sneaker reselling market, and learning about, you know, there's all these kids who are teenagers and they're just like making bank reselling limited edition sneakers.
And what about the Wolf and Wilhelmine event, Strategy in the Gray?
Yes. So we did two events with them, Wolf and Wilhelmine. So we did Strategy in the Gray and also the Imposter Syndrome one. And they have an incredible space. It is a 3-story house. So for those events, they tend to be smaller. So we only had around 25 people. So for Strategy in the Gray specifically, it was all about how strategy is not black and white. And how do you navigate this like grayness of this career and talking to the co-lead strategists at Wolf and Wilhelmine, talking about, you know, how they approach strategy, how did they navigate their career to get to where they are, what are some horrible bosses that they used to have. And it was just a very open conversation, and everyone at the audience really appreciated how open they were and kind of chimed in the end on their point of view on, you know, what is going on in their careers. And it was a very nice, intimate night.
And then I guess the last one is the one that we did at Huge, which was about clarity. And for those who weren't there, I think that maybe 70 to 80 people came. And I had found in the Sweathead Facebook group that when people were getting into it, I asked a question, you know, what's something you want to get better at this year? And there were a couple of months where the word clear or the word clarity popped up, and we thought, well, let's just do an event about that. And I like every now and then I like to do events which I call back and forths, where there's no presentation, but people bring a paper and pen and pencil, and I just try to walk them through their own minds. And one of the things I wanted to talk to people about as far as clarity goes is you kind of decide what clarity is. One of the discussions that I enjoyed was the one around what's the point of clarity. You know, when you're working with other people, this might be an obvious thing to say, but the point of clarity is to help you work better together.
Yeah.
What stuck with you from, not from what I said, but from what other people talked about during that session?
I think one thing that how you approach it was around, in order to figure out clarity for your project, you also need to understand what clarity, as you mentioned, is to yourself. So you kind of approach it in a very human way to understand, you know, what is clarity mean to you? And people were like, it'll confuse at first, but as we continued in the night, it just kind of came to clarity about what you were doing, about how, like, you know, you need to understand what you are personally getting at in order to get to clarity. I think that I definitely applied some of the things that you mentioned in order to approach some of my future projects, because, like, I mean, I'm sure everyone goes through this, where like every single day there's a new element that comes into the scenario, whatever projects you're working on, and there's always so many people involved. It's so easy for anything to get so muddy. So it's important to just like ask the right questions and get to the gist of, you know, why are we doing this thing that we're doing, and, you know, keep things on track.
Tell me about side projects. You've got a podcast with a bunch of episodes talking to people about side projects. Why are side projects important to you, and what makes them important to a strategist?
I think side projects are really important because, you know, a lot of times people do their 9-to-5 jobs and they think that their job is just their identity, and they forget about all the different sides of them, all the different curiosities that they have, all the passions that they have outside of work. And to live as a wholesome and happy person, you kind of need to fuel those curiosities and those passions that you have. And side projects is a great way to explore those things inside of you that you know, it doesn't have to eventually become your next company or your, you know, next big thing that you make, but it's just having that
constant curiosity and thing that you're doing outside of work so that you can feel more balanced as a person and you have an escape. And a lot of times it also, you know, benefits your 9-to-5 job in ways that you don't even realize. And for example, if you're, you know, if you're really into music and you learn about this like thing that happened in history of music, a lot of times you can use those insights and use those things that you learned and apply that in different ways of creative thinking when you are working your 9-to-5 job. And I've interviewed a lot of really interesting people on my podcast, 5-to-9. You know, some of them just constantly are, I call them like serial side project makers. Some of them eventually made a career out of their side projects. Some of them, you know, one of them, she was a public speaker outside of work and she now tours the world, left advertising as an art director and tours the world speaking. So you never know how, where those things can lead you. And the greatest thing about side projects is that there's no risk because you're just kind of like doing things. You can do whatever you want during that time that you have. So it's truly just like your own creative expression and it's your own initiative to do whatever you want with no pressure and no risk. And that's kind of where the most beautiful things come to life.
And I think side projects are an act of self-love. A job doesn't love you. A job doesn't care for you. A job's not going to fulfill all your needs. You're not going to find all of yourself in a job. A side project is making a statement to yourself that you matter, that your exploration matters, that your creativity matters, that your self-expression matters. And you can do it just for you. Keep it in your bedroom if you need to. You can bring it into work at times. You'll always find some way to connect it, even if it's just in an anecdote, in a story, talking to teammates or to clients. And it electrifies people when they know that you do stuff for the sake of it. What do you say to someone who says that I just don't have time?
Oh, man, I get that a lot. People always are like, how do you find so much time? I have no time to do anything. It's the same mentality of when people ask you about like work-life balance. It's all about priority. Everyone has 24 hours in the day. And if you don't prioritize something, that just means that it's not important enough to you. If something is truly important to you, you will make time for it and you will do it. Mm-hmm. So it's all about prioritization.
Yeah. I think when we started working with each other right around then, I started to ask myself a question, what's the best way to spend my time right now? And if the answer was just to sit there and look at the sky or to go do yoga under a tree or to work my ass off, that's fine. Whatever the answer is, the point was to ask myself that question so that I would take responsibility for what I do. You mentioned earlier that New York can be a little bit difficult as far as getting people together, getting people to turn up. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Because there's so much going on. It's like people constantly feel FOMO. There's this one party going on or this other event. Oh, I can't make the other event because there's like other better event that I have to go to. Do you not feel that way?
Me, no. I don't go to many things.
Yeah, I mean, like New York is so big, but it's definitely tough to, you just need to find people who are like you in order to feel, you know, the power of New York, because it could definitely feel lonely here because there's like just like too much and too sad, so many things going on that is around you, but it's not, you know, you might not be a part of it. So you have to be part of something. Strategist is trying to make people part of something.
I like that quote that you have to find your people to feel the power of New York. It's an unusual thing to talk about loneliness in a massive city like this, but it is a thing. Yeah. A lot of people here come from other places and it's a competitive and volatile city. So in the agency world, jobs can come and go very, very quickly. People are competing and there's a bit of self-importance with that. People are really busy. In some companies, they're traveling a lot as well. So it just does make it difficult to get people to come out to events at times, let alone if you throw in the idea of choice.
Yeah.
Tina, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at strategist.co, strtgst.co. My website is tinayip, tinayip.com. And feel free to email me at tina@tinayip.com.
Tina, thanks for joining me on Sweathead today. Peace.
Thanks, Mark.